Now, Sandy.
Ned stopped me at this point to ask why the forensic examination of the Buick was conducted in such an odd, to him at least, off-the-cuff manner. Because, I told him, the only criminal complaint in the matter that any of us could think of was theft of services. $7 worth of high-test gasoline. That's a misdemeanor, not worth a forensic crew's time. They would have burnt almost that much gas getting over here from Shippenville, Archie pointed out. Not to mention the man-hours, Phil added. I said, Tony didn't want to start a paper trail. Remembered that there wasn't one at that point. All he had was a car, a very weird car, granted. One with no license plates, no registration, and B.B. Roth confirmed this, no VIN number either. But Roach had reason to believe the owner drowned in the stream behind the gas station. Pooh, Shirley said. The driver's overcoat turned out to be a plastic garbage can. So much for Bradley Roach's ideas. Plus, Phil put in, Ennis and your dad observed no tracks going down the slope behind the station, and the grass was still wet. If the guy had gone down there, he would have left a sign. Mostly, Tony wanted to keep it in-house, Shirley said. Would you say that's a fair way to put it, Sandy? Yes, the Buick itself was strange, but our way of dealing with it wasn't much different from the way we deal with anything out of the ordinary. A trooper down, like your father last year, or one who's used his weapon, or an accident, like when George Morgan was in hot pursuit of that crazy asshole who snatched his kids. We were all silent for a moment. Cops have nightmares, any trooper's wife will tell you that. And in the bad dream department, George Morgan was one of the worst. He'd been doing 90, closing in on the crazy asshole who had a habit of beating the kids he had snatched and claimed to love when it happened. George is almost on top of him, and all at once here's this senior citizen crossing the road, 70 years old, slower than creeping bullfrog Jesus, and legally blind. The asshole would have been the one to hit her if she'd started across 3 seconds earlier, but she didn't. No, the asshole blew right by her, the rearview mirror on the passenger side of his vehicle so close it almost took off her nose. Next comes George, and kapow! He had 12 blameless years on the state police, 2 citations for bravery, community service awards without number. He was a good father to his own children, a good husband to his wife, and all that ended when a woman from Lasburg Cut tried to cross the street at the wrong moment and he killed her with PSP Cruiser D-27. George was exonerated by the State Board of Review and came back to a desk job on the troop, rated PLD, permanent light duty, at his own request. He could have gone back full-time as far as the brass was concerned, but there was a problem. George could no longer drive, not even the family car to the market. He got the shakes every time he slid behind the wheel, and his eyes teared up until he was suffering from a kind of hysterical blindness. That summer, he worked nights on dispatch. In the afternoons, he coached the Troop D-sponsored Little League team all the way to the state tournament. When that was over, he gave the kids their trophy and their pins, told them how proud he was. Then went home. A player's mother drove him, drank 2 beers, and blew his brains out in the garage. He didn't leave a note. Cops rarely do. I wrote a press release in the wake of it. Reading it, you never would have guessed it was written with tears on my face. And it suddenly seemed very important that I communicate some of the reason why to Curtis Wilcox's son. We're a family, I said. I know that sounds corny, but it's true. Even Mr. Dillon knew that much, and you do too, don't you? The kid nodded his head. Of course he did. And the year after his father died, we were the family that mattered to him most. The one he sought out and the one that gave him what he needed to get on with his life. His mother and sisters loved him, and he loved them, but they were going on with their lives in a way that Ned could not, at least not yet. Some of it was being male instead of female. Some of it was being 18. Some of it was all those questions of why that wouldn't go away. I said. What families say and how families act when they're in their houses with the doors shut and how they talk and behave when they're out on their lawns and the doors are open, those can be very different things. Ennis knew that Buick was wrong. Your dad did. Tony did. I did. Mr. D most certainly did. The way that dog howled. I fell silent for a moment. I've heard that howl in my dreams. Then I pushed on. But legally, it was just an object, a res, as the lawyers say, with no blame held against it. We couldn't very well hold the Buick for theft of services, could we? And the man who ordered the gas that went into its tank was long gone and hard to find. The best we could do was to think of it as an impoundment. Ned wore the frown of someone who doesn't understand what he's hearing. I could understand that. I hadn't been as clear as I wanted to be, or maybe I was just playing that famous old game, the one called It Wasn't Our Fault. Listen, Shirley said. Suppose a woman stopped to use the restroom at that station and left her diamond engagement ring on the washstand, and Bradley Roach found it in there, okay? Okay, Ned said, still frowning. And let's say Roach brought it to us instead of just putting it in his pocket and then taking it to a pawn shop in Butler. We'd make a report, maybe put out the make and the model of the woman's car to the troopers in the field, if Roach could give them to us. But we wouldn't take the ring, would we, Sandy? No, I said. We'd advise Roach to put an ad in the paper. Found a woman's ring. If you think it may be yours, call this number and describe. At which point Roach would get pissing and moaning about the cost of putting an ad in the paper. A whole $3. And then we'd remind him that folks who find valuable property often get rewards, Phil said. And he'd decide maybe he could find $3 after all. But if the woman never called or came back, I said, that ring would become Roach's property. It's the oldest law in history, finders keepers. So Ennis and my dad took the Buick. No, I said. The troop took it. What about theft of services? Did that ever get filed? Oh, well, I said with an uncomfortable little grin. $7 was hardly worth the paperwork, was it, Phil? Nah, Phil said. But we squared it up with Hugh Bossy. A light was dawning on Ned's face. You paid for the gas out of petty cash. Phil looked both shocked and amused. Never in your life, boy. Petty cash is the taxpayers' money, too. We passed the hat, I said. Everybody that was there gave a little. It was easy. If Roach found a ring and nobody claimed it, it would be his, Ned said. So wouldn't the Buick be his? Maybe if he kept it, I said. But he turned it over to us, didn't he? And as far as he was concerned, that was the end of it. Arky tapped his forehead and gave Ned a wise look. Nothing upstairs that one, he said. For a moment I thought Ned would turn to brooding on the young man who had grown up to kill his father, but he shook that off. I could almost see him do it. Go on, he said to me. What happened next? Oh boy, who can resist that?